Hello and welcome to another edition of Community In-Depth. I'm your host today, Mike Rood, and you're listening to KDWA Radio, 1460 AM, 97.7 FM. Today in the studio, I have with me Rick Schuster of Partners in Energy, a Hastings City organization, and City Councilwoman Tina Fulch. Welcome to you two.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
Tina, we're here today because you are excited about bringing in a special display for the car show this weekend. Why don't you give us an introduction as to what's going on?
Sure, Mike. We're going to be sponsoring Hastings' first electric vehicle car show. And so we're really jazzed up about it. It's actually going to be a part of the historic Hastings car show, which takes place, as you know, twice a month in the summertime. And so it's this upcoming Saturday, August 24th. And the car show runs from, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. down on 2nd Street. And we were blessed. We were given the space that's immediately underneath the bridge. So right underneath the bridge deck on 2nd Street, the south side next to the mural. And we're going to have 6 electric vehicles there on display, just, to help educate folks about what electric vehicles look like. And a really other cool component to it is that we're going to have EV owners on site. We're going to have materials for folks who are interested so that they can learn about how it is that they can charge vehicles at home. And Rick is going to talk a little bit about, these issues as well. And another awesome, awesome piece to this is that the new parking ramp that's down on 2nd Street there where the old First National Bank used to be is now has a charger in it.
Okay.
The Confluence Development has actually placed 2 chargers down on the lower level.
All right.
And so that puts Hastings officially on the map.
That's a good place to be. And Rick, tell us a little bit about what we can expect to see coming into that show this Saturday.
So currently we're planning to have a Chevy Volt. That's one with a B and one with a V. The Volt they no longer make, but the Bolt they do. And we have some Volts that are already out there. We've got a Nissan Leaf. We've got an Outlander PHV, which is a plug-in electric vehicle. We got a Tesla Model 3, a Tesla Model X, and that's what we have on the schedule right now.
Tell us a little bit about the Teslas.
Okay, so the Teslas, it's one of the earlier electric vehicles that have been out there. And the newer Teslas, they're getting the range up there quite high now. You can get a Tesla now with the extended battery package that has a range of 370 miles. We're also starting to see a network of superchargers. So with a Tesla, the Model S with the supercharger battery capabilities, you can charge around 150 miles in 30 minutes. So if you happen to find a supercharger in a restaurant, you could go in, get something to eat, come back out and have 150 miles on. So you can kind of see as the technology progresses, it will get to the point where you could go on a road trip with these cars if you planned it right.
Okay. And with that technology, I know that starting out, the batteries were extremely heavy, that kind of thing. How is the technology progressing with these cars?
The technology is getting better and the range is getting better. I think, in reality, we're probably still one generation away from having the batteries be extremely functional. I mean, I put on 36,000 miles on my Chevy Volt. And it does quite well. It's just that you got to keep them plugged in. There's some limitations on the batteries when it's extremely cold, they do better if you keep them plugged in. There's a heater that keeps the battery warm. If it's extremely hot out, it's good to keep them plugged in so that the batteries aren't exposed to that high heat. So I think when they get another generation of batteries, they'll be able to take away some of those limitations. But like I said, I put on 36,000 miles and, mine is a hybrid, so it's got an engine and a battery, but I run about 92% battery.
Is there any problem with developing what they call a memory charge in these batteries? I know for certain electronics, the battery technology, maybe cadmium or lithium ion, where you plug it in and charge it and then discharge it, it tends to develop a memory of being fully charged and not charged, which reduces the life of the battery. Is that an issue with electric cars?
It's you know, I'll speak to the Volt because I'm most familiar with that. And I know when they engineered the Volt, they designed the range not to use the full capacity of the battery to somewhat mimic that or mask that away. So, you know, there's a board out there. I've seen cars, Chevy Volts with 250,000 miles on them that are still running that, you know, haven't had battery problems.
Okay.
So they've done a good job of that. Now, the one thing that's a little different about the car battery, the best place to keep it if you're going to store it is about middle of the range. So you don't want to charge it all the way and you don't want it discharged. But provided you just plug it in and let the car take care of it, they've pretty much designed it out so that it shouldn't be an issue.
So there's software or control components that monitor the state of the charge and help to reduce that kind of a situation. Are the batteries typical lead acid or are they lithium ion?
Most of them are still lithium ion batteries.
Okay. And what is the life expectancy for the battery at this point?
I don't know that they have a lot of solid research out there yet. I know my sister-in-law has a Prius with 180-some thousand miles on it.
Nice.
And like I said, there's a board out there, voltstats.net, and out there you can see Chevy Volts with, you know, a couple hundred thousand, 250,000 miles on them, still going. The other thing about the batteries that people might not understand is, say I have a battery problem, I don't necessarily have to replace the whole battery. There's modules in there.
Right.
So you can reduce the cost by doing, you know, one or two modules if that's all that needs to be replaced.
And initial cost for purchase and maintenance costs, how are they stacking up against the traditional internal combustion engine?
So those costs are coming down. There are some government rebates out there, too. When I bought mine, there was a $7,000 government federal tax credit that I used.
Okay.
But those expire after about 200,000 sales, I believe, is when they cut those off. So Toyota's exceeded that. You no longer get that. And they are slightly more expensive, but if you look at the overall cost, you know, I can drive mine 40 miles for about $1.50 worth of electricity. And if I charge off peak, I can do it for about a third of that. So I could run the car 40 miles for 50 cents if I used, you know, like Excel's off peak. So in the end, a lot of the research would say the electric cars are cheaper. You don't have to do the brakes because the brakes charge the battery. So you don't use the brakes very much. I actually push a button on my steering wheel to stop the car most times.
Don't use the brakes. That's interesting. What other kind of maintenance issues come up, you know, for regular maintenance with those? I'm sure you still have things like wheel bearings and tire pressure. Are there any other fluid level checks that you need to do or anything like that?
An oil change. I've understood that you don't need to have those any longer if it's a full EV, correct?
Correct. And it depends. Like mine's a hybrid, so I have an engine and I have all those things. You don't do them very often. But so on the full EV, you've got a lot less parts involved. And so there's a lot less maintenance overall. You know, the research is saying that they're a lot cheaper to run because of fewer parts. And you don't have that engine and all those components.
Right. But you'll still have things like wheel bearings and things like, you know, keep it running smoothly. I know the sound that a vehicle makes when the wheel bearing is going bad, and it's it's no fun, I tell you what.
You'll still have all that, you know, maybe a cruise control issue or something like that. It's all there.
And basically, all computer controlled, all the systems are kind of like what they do with regular engines now. There is what they call an ECM, electronic control module. How easy is it for that to do, say, system updates or program updates with that?
Yeah, again, it's going to depend on which car you have. You know, if you have a Tesla, I know during the hurricane, they sent out updates to extend battery range for people that couldn't charge. I mean, they did that on the fly. They have a ludicrous mode, which is, you know, it makes it the fastest car, production car off the line built today. And they have software updates that put that in and they give it to you for a while. And then if you don't pay, they take it out. So they can do all kinds of things. Mine, you know, isn't quite that advanced, but I know the Chevy Bolt.
So I'm thinking then the development team, if you have ludicrous mode, they used to watch a lot of Mel Brooks, maybe.
That could be.
You're listening to In Depth on KDWA. I'm your host, Mike Root. I've got Tina Fulch, City Council member for Hastings, and Rick Schuster of Partners in Energy. Tina, tell me a little bit about what the city hopes to accomplish by supporting these kinds of endeavors.
The Partners in Energy project is actually a partnership between the city, Xcel Energy, CenterPoint Energy, and also we've had some additional partners come on board, Conservation Minnesota, our Hastings Environmental Protectors. And so everyone really has, our eye on the goal, which is, you know, reducing carbon emissions. Currently, the energy field is, I believe, number two in the amount of carbon emissions that are produced within our country. And so our state, under Governor Walz, has recently taken on the goal of having Minnesota be 100% renewable energy by 2050. And so the movement towards electric vehicles is already happening elsewhere.
Right,
you know, in
right.
Europe, it's moving much quicker. And then on our east coasts, the east coast and the west coast, here in Minnesota, we only have about 3% of our vehicles are electric vehicles. But you will begin to see a movement towards electric vehicles happening much more rapidly in the next few years. Several of the various kinds of manufacturers are beginning to really focus on, you know, EV technology. And cities, local governments are beginning to plan for infrastructure so that we can have electric charging stations, you know, more readily available for folks so that conversion can begin to happen. And so, the estimates are, you know, by 2040, about 50% of our light duty fleet will actually be electric vehicles. And so it's going to be a big change. And so just helping, you know, our residents here begin to understand the new technology a little bit better.
And how, from a city standpoint, how much of a task is it to adjust infrastructure to accommodate this new technology? Say, wait, charging stations, we got the two in the new parking lot. How do we add more of those in town, and how much of an investment or a job does that turn out to be?
Right. Well, you would hope that the private sector would take it on, but as you know, with things that are new technology of this sort, what we're seeing is some local governments are being more progressive in installing chargers for the public to be able to use. As a, for instance, our Dakota County was the first in Hastings here to actually, you know, put in some EV chargers. There's now an EV charger at our library, the
right.
new Hastings Library.
Okay.
And then also out at Spring Lake Park, in case you want to, you know,
really?
Go on a nice walk.
Nice. Yeah,
there's one out there. And so when it came to the Confluence Development parking ramp, as a council member, I was on, you know, a few of the walkthroughs for the new facility, and I had asked the developers if they would please put in a charging
right.
station, because it's a lot more cost effective to put in the infrastructure as you're building
right.
something new, rather than having to go in afterwards and rip it all up and make sure that you're getting, you know, proper voltage, you know, put inside. And so so it was a great opportunity, and I'm really excited that Pat Regan and his team, you know, decided
right.
To move
yep.
forward with that. It's a great benefit for our Downtown Business Association, you know, as well. Now, Rick can speak a little bit about how it is you find charging stations, but now we're officially on the map as having a charging station in our downtown.
I like your statement of having the private sector do the legwork to put it in, because it more cost-effective that way as they're doing their development or redevelopment of an area. How closely or how aggressive does the city maybe want to be in aggressive's probably not the right word, but encouraging that changeover of infrastructure? What kind of procedures do you put in place to help the private sector see, hey, this is a good idea?
Sure. Well, when it comes to you know, Hastings doesn't have, you know, a tremendous amount of tourism. Like, our downtown is probably the best spot
right.
at this current, you know, moment to mm-hmm. be able to attract folks from outside. But what cities are beginning to look at preparing for is about 3% of public charging. I'm sorry, let me say that again. So what I've seen when I've gone to conferences about electric vehicles, local governments are being advised for when they're doing planning to estimate about 3% of public parking spaces to be set aside for electric vehicle charging, you know, moving forward. And so we'll begin to more slowly see, you know, various communities roll that out. Some communities like Edina are all over it.
And, right.
You know, they have many charging stations that they're helping, you know, to get put in place. The city of Hastings hasn't had a formal conversation yet about putting in, you know, city-sponsored charging stations. But the city is looking at, you know, possibly converting some of its own fleet over to electric vehicles. And so, of course, then that would also mean putting in chargers for city fleet. And so we haven't had a full conversation about that yet, but I'm sure it'll be on the docket coming up the next year or two.
Excellent. Rick, before we go, we have just a couple of minutes left. As I'm sitting here hearing the trend moving towards EV, do you suppose, or is there now already possibly a market for retrofitting current vehicles? Can that be done? Is that something that people are thinking about?
I think you could. I've seen some of that kind of go on where somebody takes a EV drivetrain and puts it into another car. But overall, I don't know that there's going to be too much of a market there. I do know that Ford Motors looking at coming out with a EV pickup truck.
Okay.
And I was a little wondering how they would make that move, but it's supposed to have a 450-mile range and have really good pulling torque.
For the show this Saturday, you know, we've told about what can be expected to see. What other kind of things do you hope the public to take away from this?
Well, one thing that I'd like to show them is, you know, I have a smartphone app that can tell me where to charge. I can filter on cost. Some of the chargers are actually free. There's quite a few of them actually. And then you can see the price and all of that. I can get all that in there. And then I'll also show them how I can, with my phone, start the car. So if I'm in a polar vortex and I leave my office in Minneapolis, provided I'm on the grid, I'll start the heaters, the seat heaters and the cabin heater. Mm-hmm. And it'll be anywhere between 70 and 80 degrees 10 minutes later when I crawl inside. So I'll show them some of those features that I can do with my car.
Right. You have been listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7. I'd like to thank my guests today, Rick Schuster from Partners in Energy and City Council member Tina Fulch. This is Mike Rood, and you're listening to KDWA.